guys, okay, I'm really recovering from that episode. We have so many blossoming relationships. Louis is moving in with Gladys, whether she likes it or not. Miles finds Jeannie, his spiritual encounter. And will Rick survive this test of time? We'll talk about it. Stay with us.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Eyes on my knee, flawless begins. Hop off a jig, barely get risked. What's going on, AfterBuzzers? I'm so happy to be back here with you guys. So much happened in this episode. Episode 6. Let's just all take a breath because there was so much going on. I really want to just start off with this theme of, it was kind of like a warfare, right? There's a lot of different warfares I feel like that are going on, and they're really all centered around Amara, in my opinion. And the reason I think so is because she's kind of blocking things off and fighting things off from all angles, whether she really knows it or not, you know? So we look at the situation with her and with Miles. Miles has clearly turned on Amara now, and now that he has made the decision to turn on her, all of this fighting is rooted in deception. Everything that he does now is deceptive. Everything that he says now is a lie because he's not being transparent, because he's now working with the FBI to not only take her down, but to take down the cartel. Yes, I know. I feel the way you do. It's like, wait, when did all this go down? And I just did not see this coming. And that's the wonderful thing about this show. Davey Holmes brings in such wonderful unpredictability to this element of the television show. And I really appreciate that. I'm always at the edge of my seat and I just don't know what's really going to happen. And it's laughable a little bit, but it's also really scary because I don't know what Amara is going to do if she does find out that Miles is working with the FBI. So let's just go back to poor Rick. Do I feel bad for Rick? It was a huge debate that we had last week. You know, we had the super fans here. Big shout out to you guys. I'm sure you're watching right now. But yes, it was a big debate here. Do we feel sorry for Rick? Do we not feel sorry for Rick? Did he bring this on himself? You know, and honestly, I have to say, I do feel a little sorry for him, un poquito. And it's really because, I mean, this poor guy feels like he's morphed into this psycho world that he can't seem to get out of. Every twist and every turn he finds himself in, he gets deeper and deeper into the rabbit hole that is Amara and Miles and the cartel. So, I mean, I have to feel just a little sorry for him, you know? And it's just, I don't know, will things get better? I can't really say right now. But it's wonderful to see how Rick is trying to stand his ground to some extent. The FBI obviously only have their best interest at heart because you see them encouraging him to stay in this, you know? They're like, why would you do witness protection? Witness protection is a joke. I mean, I've never heard a cop say witness protection is a joke. So that makes you want to think, you know, like, are they here for their own self-interest? And I have to say that they are, because the only reason they want Rick to stay in this entire scheme that they have going on is so it can be successful, right? If Rick just picks up and leaves and just disappears out of nowhere after having disappeared for 12 hours, I would say it's a little suspicious. And being that Amara and her team is already somewhat on to him, yeah, I really think he wants to stay away from anything that comes off remotely suspicious, you know? And, you know, when we're talking about Amara, she's also facing some heat on her family level, right? Because Yago now is teamed up with LA. And LA is no joke. We're so used to seeing Amara in control. From the moment we have met this character, she's completely in control. She does things how she wants them to be done. She has people do things how she wants them to be done. So it's never a question of, if, it's always a question of when she's going to get her way, never a question of if she's going to get her way. So I think it's really, really testy and interesting. And again, plays to the wonderful elements of this show that she is now on the receiving end of this control factor that she usually dishes out. So when it comes to LA is no joke. They're nothing like a Mars crew. They're so much more organized, so much more intentional about every single thing that they do. So I'm really, really taken aback when Amara thinks that she can, I don't know, beat them or try to go around them. But I understand why she did it, right? So we all saw Yago really graduating in the eyes of Los Angeles, in the Carpacito cartel. He graduates to this level of control that he did not see coming. I did not see coming. I'm sure you did not see coming. So it's really one of those moments where we're just like, okay, why are they trusting this to Yago? On one element, it's like, okay, Yago has been through a lot, you know, and you know how I feel about his character. I love Gaia Rubbles, the actor who plays Yago, but I definitely have a very touchy relationship with the character himself because he definitely makes such tragic decisions sometimes I just can't get behind. And I truly believe those decisions are very much blinded by his ego. His ego dictates a lot of his communication skills. His ego dictates his relationships, his morals, and the way he sees the world and the way he views his role in the world and in any capacity, you know, whether in Amara's team or now working for LA. Look at this. Once given the opportunity to name a company, what does he name it? Yago LLC or something along those lines. So that really tells you the kind of person that he is and how much he loves himself, you know, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but I mean, it's something to be said. So we definitely see Yago stepping into this theme of wanting to take control, wanting to take charge, and, you know, just being as deceptive as he can be. But Amara is not having it. She tries to stick things out with LA. She tried to really allow that relationship to not dissolve as tumultuously as it could. But once she found out that they had hired her nephew, it's over. And furthermore, this is a nephew that I have exiled from my organization. So it's a little disrespectful. It's like, if I'm saying that we're done with Yago, we should all be done with Yago. And being that I take precedence with LA, she expected that that would be the case. But she had no idea, like I said, that she's fighting off these attacks from all different levels. She's fighting it off from Yago, but she's also fighting it off from Miles. And yes, she's also doing it when it comes to the FBI, but she had no idea that he'd gone to the cartel about this film. Wilderness was her film, her baby. She's so excited about it. She has, you know, her picture framed from her first movie, and she's excited, and she feels like her and Rick are about to take on this next film. And she finds out, whoa, okay, yes, I'm executive producing this, but Yago is in charge. So that really took her for a loop, and she did not see that coming at all. So I think when she stepped into Yago's home and busted in there, it was to show who's boss. She wanted to macho up a little bit and let him know that just because LA thinks to see something in you, I don't know why I just did that, though they seem to see something in you, I don't respect it, and I really don't honor it, and I can't take you serious, and I will never take you serious. You're my nephew, you're a kid, and that's the role that you will always play to me. So I think that the way Yago also reacted in that situation was important because he started off with his ego being in the front, which his ego always is, you know? But she really put him in check and just reminding him of the mistakes that he has made, which really put his business ethic in check and really made him realize, like, okay, walking into this new opportunity, I would hope that the character Yago can really take his time and figure out how to be most successful, not just how to be the biggest guy on the block or the biggest, you know, businessman or the biggest, you know, boss and boss everybody around and just to take a big presence. But instead, find out how you can actually be the most successful in this role that you have been placed in. So I really hope he takes the time to do that. And I would, you know, that's just really the big deal when it comes to Iago. It's, we're all rooting for you, but can you really make this happen? But I think on another level, you know, Amara is facing off this fight with the cartel. So she has Iago, she has Miles, but she also has this fight with the cartel. When she does choose to break bread with, or break accords, or, you know, cut ties with Iago and with the cartel, they weren't taking that from her. This is not what you think this is. You're not running anything here, Amara. So it's really important for you to realize the way to deal with these people. And they really increased her tax again. So I think that that's really putting things in jeopardy in terms of her business, but it's also putting things in perspective in terms of her mindset. So she can know, hey, you're no longer in charge. And I think it's really interesting to see how Amara handles that all season. The other really thing that happened this season, or this episode, episode 6, that really shook me, was Unlimited Limited. And that's the title of the episode. And I think that that theme really came out when you see the confrontation between Lewis and Miles. You know, we leave Lewis and Miles in a very, very, just a very, very hot state. It's not the nicest, it's not the best, and I actually predicted it to be the beginning of the end of their relationship. I would say once you pull a gun on a friend, I don't know, where's that friendship going, you know? But on one hand, there is this idea of whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right? So if they can get through this, maybe they can get through anything. But coming into this episode, I was very uneasy about their relationship. I was a little upset about Miles and the way that he handled the relationship with Lewis, but I also understood it, right? Because at the end of the day, he's putting who is most important, Shorty, you know, first, and I have to do what's best for my daughter. So I understood it, but I can definitely understand as well where Lewis is coming from, where he would be upset that Miles would make this decision without him, and more so not even without him, but against his wishes as well. So that's really something to focus on and to kind of talk about too. So he comes in, Miles comes home to Lewis packing up his belongings. I mean, baby, please don't go. Like, cue the R&B songs. The bromance is over. So he's packing up his things and he's upset. And I understand it. He's upset. He's ready to go. And he doesn't really quite know where he's going. But he knows that he has to get out of there. And he says something to Miles that I thought was really true to his character, but also true to this culture of not snitching that we have in the society, which I think has its pros and its cons, and we can always discuss that. That's another story for another day. But he says, you know, in my family, Lewis says this to Miles, in my family, no matter how hard things get, we don't flip sides. And I think that's the black and whiteness of it. So we can see it and we go, oh, I see where he's coming from. I understand why Miles did it. He has his family at, and, you know, in his heart, and he's trying to do what's best for Shorty. But Lewis really sees it as black and white. And it's just like, you know, you're a snitch. And I can't relate. And so I just don't see how that relationship can really be salvaged. But, you know, Miles is somebody who makes very intentional decisions, you know, much like the cartel. He's bold in his decisions. He's fast with them as well. He's quick with them, and he's decisive. So we can appreciate that about his character. And I think one thing that we even saw, like last episode, is him being decisive in his decision to go to the cartel. Him being decisive in his decision to turn on Amara. Him being decisive in his decision to, you know, leverage this movie with the FBI. You know, he looked right to that Officer Dillard and let her know, I have what you want. You know, you need me, I don't need you. That takes a quick level of decision making to be able to, you know, just come to those kinds of conclusions with a lot of pressure on you. And we know he had a whole lot of pressure on him. So I think it's really interesting to notice that about Miles as well. He makes a lot of decisions, whether they're good or bad. We see him reconnect with Jeannie this episode. You know, his spiritual encounter with Jeannie was really what set him, I think, back on the right path after his accident, because he was really going down this really dangerous slope of crashing everything around him, from his career to his relationships to the most important relationship, the one with Shorty, all because things didn't quite turn out the way he wanted. And I feel as though that's life. You know, we all have moments where things don't turn out the way we want. Like, what world are you living in, Miles? I mean, you should know that. You've come from Ireland and Vegas, and you've come to LA, and you've always been able to make a name for yourself, or if not a name for yourself, you've always been able to make a living for yourself, you know, create a life for yourself. So I think that for him to be so shocked or taken back by that accident, or even, I guess, the sum of events that led him up to that accident, was understandable. But I'm really glad that there was somebody there to jolt him out of his depression. Because as human beings, sometimes it's so easy for us to fall into this level of sadness and wanting to wallow in our own disappointment. But you cannot be discouraged by your disappointment. You really have to learn to pick things up. I mean, acknowledge the feelings. Feel them wholly, and be kind to yourself, because, you know, the same things you would say to a best friend or to a loved one is going to be okay. So you have to say those things to yourself. And I think Miles wasn't able to do so. But the beautiful thing about life is sometimes when you're not able to do so, when you're not able to look yourself in the mirror and, you know, brush your shoulder off or fix your crown and really remind yourself who you are, you have people around you who can do that, or who can help you come back to yourself and be reminded of who you are. And that's what Jeannie did for Miles. So I think for the last couple of episodes, we've watched him kind of chase her down, right? Figure out who she is. How can he locate her? How can he find her? How can he reconnect with her? And he finally does. But I'm so upset. Like, I'm really upset, you guys, because she's married. Like, what is going on with these people in this episode, in this show, in this life, in this world? It's ridiculous. Of course he finds her and she's married. Oh, I was so disappointed. But of course, we're talking about Miles and how he's quick and he's decisive and he doesn't necessarily take no as an answer. And even though I vigorously disagree with him trying to go after a married woman, shame on you, Miles. But I mean, he, you know, he is who he is. He does what he wants and he tries to make things work the way he can. And she allows it. So, I mean, it's really on her, right? So I'm really excited to see what's going on with Jeannie and with Miles, and seeing this reconnection that they have and seeing how that affects him in his work life, but more importantly, his personal life. Because the way they ended this episode was, oh my goodness, it was like one of the cutest scenes I've seen on Get Shorty. But I couldn't even celebrate it because I don't support it. She's married. Like, you can't be cooking dinner with a married woman. Like, what is happening here? Like, why did she come back? Where is her husband? Like, I don't get it, but we're gonna find out more. So we'll see what's going on. Or maybe she, you know, maybe she was just saying that. Maybe that was like a joke. Is that just like my wishful thinking? Okay, maybe I think it's my wishful thinking. So perhaps that's what's going on my end. But yeah, I just really, I want you to be happy, Miles. I really want you to be happy, and I want you to enjoy life and all the things that it brings to you. So I really don't want you to have all this drama with having to date a married woman. So I don't know. I have to take a break when it comes to Miles and Jeannie, but I really hope it works out. But I know something that's definitely working out here at AfterBuzz, and that is all our wonderful after shows. Hi, AfterBuzzers. Our network produces after shows for all your favorite TV shows, from dramas, reality TV, sci-fi, and more. There's no network that works harder to serve television fans like you. Of course you. But we need your help. We're asking that you subscribe to one or more of our YouTube channels. By subscribing to our channels, YouTube will suggest content that's tailor-made just for you, and you will help AfterBuzz grow. And if you're worried about pesky notifications, don't worry about it. Those are optional. So hit the subscribe button right now. Thank you. And check out all of our AfterBuzz YouTube channels as well. Let us know you did in the comments, and I will be sure to shout you out and show you some love because we're very appreciative. For now, thank you for being the best fans ever and helping us be the ESPN of TV talk. All right, guys. So, you know, that's really what's going on. And, you know, we have the people who are being the ESPN of TV talk. And then we have Miles, who just wants to be, you know, the ESPN of movie making. He just wants to run the movie making business. And he even wants to be with a married woman. And he has no remorse. So I just don't know, Miles. I'm a little upset with you for that one. But I mean, another thing that I will have to give him props on, the one thing that Miles is doing and doing fairly well, in my opinion, is being able to pick his battles. That is one lesson that is really important to learn as a human being. Knowing when to pick your battles, when to fight, when not to fight, what's worth fighting for. And we've seen Miles in the first season try to be a little more diplomatic. Second season, very rough, very, very rough. But now he's mellowing out into like a nice middle ground. And I think the middle ground is the sweet spot where you're supposed to live, where you can exude the confidence without having to put your hands on anyone. You know, you don't have to actually threaten people and threaten their lives and threaten them physically to get what you want. But it's always important to figure out what people want and try to appeal to that interest, right? And that's what I see Miles doing. When he was having a conversation with Lawrence. Shout out to April, who's always looking out for Miles. You know, she introduces him to Lawrence, her new boss. Side note, I think it's so cute how April, well, I don't know if cute is the word, but it's interesting how April is having to climb up this new ladder at her new job. And it's like she has to learn all these social cues around her new boss. And it's truly uncomfortable, but it's also really humorous. So, I mean, again, just the beautiful writing and how they inject humor into this episode. But going back to Miles, I think it's really important to see how he has learned when to fight, when not to fight, and how to fight, right? So he's sitting down with Lawrence. He meets Lawrence for the first time, and he's pitching Wilderness, the big movie that he loves. He wants to work on this movie. It means so much to him. He's raised $30 million for this movie. Come on. Who raises that much? Once you've raised that much, it's like, this film has to happen. Thanks. I don't want to hear anything else. So he's very much invested in this film. Goes to Lawrence, and Lawrence tells him it's going to happen in 2 years. I'm not going to lie to you guys. As I was watching this, I was a little afraid because I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know if Miles was going to put his hands on him or attack him verbally. But he doesn't do that. Instead, he takes what he says, he listens to the reasoning as to why he doesn't want to do the film right now, and he comes up with a solution. I was so shocked. I was like, oh my goodness, can we get a round of applause for Miles? That is growth. Everybody doesn't have to do what you want. I mean, you're not a dictator, but you have to definitely be able to speak to people and communicate with them and appeal to their self-interest, of course. So I think it was really important to see that little bit of growth when it came to Miles. And the second meeting he had with him, he had already solved Lawrence's problem, got the film done, and even in that situation, Miles was able to also manipulate the FBI. Again, being able to leverage what he had to get what he didn't have. And I think it's so wonderful to see Miles growing. Yeah, he's broad, he's rough around the edges, but he's smart, he's brilliant. And I think we need to give these characters a little more credit for their brain. And I think all of these characters use their minds in very tactful ways, and it's very interesting and very worthy and very educational to watch as well. So he goes and he you know, leverages this with the FBI. He gets everything solved for Lawrence, and he comes back to Lawrence like, hey, dude, you know, you didn't want to do this because you didn't have the, we didn't have the military base. Well, boom, we have the military base. Now what? And then he learns a little something about Hollywood, which is sweet talk. Lawrence was sweet talking him, giving him all these reasons why he couldn't do it. Miles then solves all the reasons he couldn't do it. And it's like, I still can't do it, dude. But instead of getting upset again, Miles comes to this guy and appeals to him in such a way that gets him to give Miles what he wants. And I think that that's really important. So I was very happy for you, Miles. I'm giving you a nice round of applause for growth and for not using your fists and instead using your mind. So we're very, very proud of you over here. But when it comes to that, I will also say, though, that I did notice that Lawrence was a little bit jealous of Miles because he doesn't understand how he was able to pull a lot of these things off, you know, from getting the set together to even getting the movie money together. So he's a little jealous, and we'll watch that relationship and see where it bubbles over. But in the meantime, guys, you know, we have a lot of wonderful things going on at this after show. We do our special segment, and we also have some news and gossip for you. But we will go into our special segment, American Gangster. We talk about the real life American gangsters in the United States. A real gangster type player plays his cards right. A real gangster type player never runs his mouth because real gangsterized players don't start fights. Hey. And brothers always got all right. Guys, American Gangsters, I actually really love. You guys are loving this segment. Thank you for reaching out and letting me know how you feel about the segment. And I'm really glad that you guys are enjoying finding out these little nuggets of education and every episode. So I really appreciate you guys for reaching out to me and letting me know how you feel. And if you have any favorite American gangsters, the fact that we're even saying favorite American gangsters, but still, I mean, it's a part of history, so why not? But if you have any favorite American gangsters, make sure you reach out to me and let me know so I can definitely find out some information and we can discuss it here on the after show. So today we'll be talking about the notorious Frank Lucas. Okay, he was born in North Carolina, but he moved to Harlem, New York at the age of 16. Frank Lucas established an extremely successful drug ring. You know, he was a drug trafficker, and he established an extremely successful ring that stretched all the way from New York to Southeast Asia. I mean, come on. And he was married to the beautiful Puerto Rican mistress, and she was wonderful. And it was just really interesting to see all the dynamics of his life. You know, he was later sentenced to 70 years in prison. Because for a very, very long time, admittedly by the DEA, they had a very weak case on Frank Lucas. But because he hired his family members and a lot of people that he knew, they were able to, you know, round up a bunch of witnesses. And because of that corroboration, they were able to get him arrested and give him 70 years in prison. With those 70 years, he ended up flipping into an FBI informant. His testimony put away 150 defendants, some of which were, a third of which were New York police officers. So there were a lot of dirty cops involved in it. So, but not only did he give away dirty cops, he gave away 30 members of his own family when he became an FBI informant. I think it's really interesting now that we see Miles turning into an FBI informant, that all of these American gangsters like got to a point where they're like, okay, I don't know if we're still going to do this. I don't know if we're going to turn on people. But I mean, it happens, right? So this is a young man who got started at 16. So, I mean, he made a lot of money. He's very, very successful. I mean, there was even a quote that where his wife during a raid threw out boxes and boxes of money, and it totaled out to a total of $548,000. And he called that street money. He called that chump change. That was nothing to him. So I think that, wow, number one. But two, it's also important to see how people can live such a fast life from beginning to end. So Frank Lucas later on got out of jail, and he was built a very great relationship with his arresting officer, Roberts. Roberts ended up being his godfather to his son, to Frank Lucas's son. So I think that's really interesting to see the man who arrested him. They built such a relationship in the long run that, you know, he ends up being, you know, being your son's godfather. So in the aftermath of Frank coming out of prison, he came home to Harlem to just a devastated place, a devastated city, a devastated community. But he felt compelled to do something about it. You know, again, living that fast life, sometimes when you're so in it, you don't realize the pain that you're causing and the effects and how long it's going to last. So him coming out of jail and prison, actually, and taking his time to rebuild and reestablish the community was very important. So he did that, and he did that with a community with his daughters, his two daughters, but he also did that with a nonprofit called the Yellow Brick Road. And if you didn't know already, the life of Frank Lucas was turned into the film starring the Denzel Washington American Gangster. So that's all we have today for our special segment. And, you know, we love hearing from you guys, so let us know how you feel about that as we transition into news and gossip.
AfterBuzz TV News.
Okay, guys. So I want to talk to you guys about something really funny that I came across on the internet. And this happened about a year ago. It was really interesting because we have our wonderful Ray Romano. He's on Jimmy Kimmel, and his son works on Jimmy Kimmel. He's talking to Jimmy, and he's like, hey, my son works here. He pulls his son out. He makes his son thank Kimmel. Kimmel's like, oh, it's fine. He goes into this conversation about his son having a girlfriend. Oh, Lord. You guys really have to see this. He asks his son if he has a girlfriend. His son does not have a girlfriend. And this is him and Jimmy Kimmel doing a live pitch for people to date Ray Romano's son. Go ahead and check it out.
I'll take you. Listen, ladies. He's a good kid, good listener. He keeps his room clean. Yes. He's had all the shots.
All right. No, I'm on Tinder. This is unnecessary.
Tinder's. You gotta do this. Sorry. You got a car, you drove a car. He's what else can we say? Jimmy Kimmel is his uncle. So you can get tickets whenever you want.
Yeah, sure, whatever you
need. Yes. You know, he knows Spanish. You know Spanish?
No, I don't know Spanish.
I know that.
You understand it. You understand it. Go ahead and say something to him. Say something.
¿Por qué no tienes novia?
This guy is hilarious.
He understood that.
Yeah.
All right, so call. Wait a minute. He has a twin. He has an identical twin. So, you know, God forbid anything should happen.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. This man is hilarious. Can you imagine growing up with Ray Romano as a dad? Oh, my goodness. He goes on to put his phone number on the actual screen. It's hilarious. Oh, my God. Oh, guys, we love the cast of Get Shorty. And we have a special announcement for you guys. Next week, we have the Goya Rubbles coming into the studio of AfterBuzz, and we will be interviewing him and talking to him about all the wonderful things he has going on, including Get Shorty, you know, his spoken word, and more. But, you know, we also have so many other talented people on Get Shorty, like Sarah Styles. I found a little clip of her singing and dancing to promote her last movie. Actually, it was a play on Broadway, so just go ahead and check it out and see what you think about that, because she's so talented.
I laid in bed excited over you.
Oh, my goodness. She's such a cutie. I just love that everyone has, like, a little hidden talent. All right, guys, let's go ahead and transition into predictions.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV.
Predictions. Okay, so I think my first prediction is definitely about my man, Mr. Ray Romano. First of all, if my parents ever did that to me, I don't even know what I would do. You are so funny. But, and I love the part about he has a twin, okay? He has an understudy. You can just date him if something happens to him. Okay, I'm sorry. He's just too funny. But predictions. And if you listen to us on iTunes, go ahead and give us 5 stars, guys, before I go into these predictions. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We appreciate you. Thank you. Okay, so our predictions for today. My prediction is definitely rooted in Ray Romano's character, Rick. Rick has done a wonderful job of trying to stay afloat, but I think right now, after he met the young lady, the beautiful young lady who was working at the ice cream truck, I think that she really changed things up for him. We talked about the beautiful work that we see on Get Shorty in terms of the music direction and the art direction. The fact that everything stopped for a second, the entire world stopped moving, all the people stopped moving, the beautiful music came on, and he was able to have that one-on-one connection with her. It seemed like a moment in Rick's life for me. So I think that up until now, he's been able to go along with the flow and just allow whatever to happen. But sometimes when you fall in love, which it seems like he's going to fall in love with this girl, he's not going to allow a lot of things to slide. He can no longer just allow life to happen to him. He has to be an active participant in being with this lady that he wants to be with and this lady that he wants to start seeing. So, I mean, I'm very interested to see how a love triangle works with Amara, because she's so dangerous. I mean, you break her heart and she's going to break your bones. So I just don't know how that's going to work out. So that's really where my prediction lies in. But my other prediction would definitely be about Shorty and Miles. I think it's very, very honorable that Miles takes the high road, even when it comes to Katie. You know, Katie has gone down and sat down with Shorty and is telling Emma, like, listen, you know, this is what's going on with me and your dad. We're getting a divorce. And I would even argue that maybe she tried to have Emma take her side, and that's kind of how Emma saw it too. But Emma clearly wants 50-50. I want to see my dad 50% of the time, and I want to see you 50% of the time. But when Emma brought that to Miles, he wasn't jumping on Katie. He wasn't, you know, he allowed that relationship of father and daughter to stay in place. He didn't start to try and turn her against her mom. So I think that's really honorable of him, and I think that's wonderful. But I think that also shows us how he's going to take on this fight of custody with Katie. So now that he has this new girlfriend, Jeannie, let's not assume that you can't, I don't even know if she can be your girlfriend. She's married, but we'll see how this happens. But now he has Jeannie on his side, and I think he has a very clear, level head. So we'll see how Miles works things out. But every time, guys, I'm very happy always to be here with you. I'm your wonderful, wonderful, blessed host, Thelma Invasive Daniel, and I'll be here next week, where we'll also have Goya Rubbles, you know, the wonderful guest star here, and he'll be talking to us about everything Get Shorty and more. So catch me on Instagram at Thelmy and Twitter at Moxie_Soul. Until next time, have a great week.
Herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.